right, welcome to Power Hour with Cenk Uygur, Nina Turner with you guys. So, Nina, I'm going to start out super random today. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready, I think.
Okay, let's do it. Let's see what happens. So, you remember the first time you won electoral office? And, well, I imagine you do. And I wanted to ask you, since you, at that point, you'd never won electoral office before, how did that first victory feel?
Surreal, amazing. I mean, I had a situation where the first office I ran for was a city council seat, and I actually lost the first time that I ran. It was in 2001, and 9/11, you know, all kinds of stuff was happening then, and I had to make the decision whether or not I was going to go for it again 4 years later. And I did in 2005 and won that race and took the oath of office in 2006. It was really surreal.
Especially after losing the first time, when you won the second time, was there like a moment or a thousand moments where you were like, yes?
Oh yeah, a thousand of those moments. And well, I see what you're doing here. It reminded me though.
What am I doing?
You're in that space and you got to say, will I take this chance again? Did that one loss define everything moving forward? Does it mean that, you know, I could never run, never win, it's over, that kind of stuff? And as 2005 proved, no, it was just 2001 was just a moment in time. And 2005, I got back up on that horse and rode it into victory.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. One more question about that, and then we'll do the regular show. do you remember what it was? You think like the top thing? I'm sure there's so many factors. You never know like how much of a factor each one of those was. But what you thought was the top factor for your victory, like what made the difference the second time around?
Learning a lot in the loss. You know, once you get over going through the stages of grief and you kind of analyze what went right, what went wrong, what could you change, what could you do better, that certainly was the foundational point going into 2005. And really my message in 2005 was you deserve better than what you had, you know, and that I am that champion, I am that fighter, I want to use your power to help us get better, because, you know, I live in the community that I ran in and grew up in this community. And so that really was the difference. And also a better understanding of myself too, that second time around as well. So I think it was really a confluence of things that helped that victory. And it was a squeaker, you know, it wasn't like it was a, you know, I won definitive, you know, I didn't win by a large margin, but I won. And that is the most important. I got one more vote than the person that was running against me. But I definitely understood myself a little better, and that sometimes in loss, and I think this is a life lesson too, Cenk, it's not just about running for office. It really is in life that sometimes things don't go the way that we planned or the way that we calculated. And you can either let that crush you, or you can use that as a sounding board for something else, whether that is doing the same thing again or doing something differently. But a loss in the moment or having an outcome that you didn't necessarily want does not mean the end of your future in any shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah. Well, two things resonated deeply there. One is you telling the voters you deserve better. That's a hell of a message. And that makes a ton of sense. And it's got Nina Turner written all over it. and you know, obviously I had the electoral loss too. And for me, I'm never going back. So that loss is gonna stay on my record forever and ever. And but I learned so much from it, and I'm using it to help others. So whether you get the credit or you don't get the credit, at least I feel like I've turned it into something positive in the world, right? And so,
you have.
Yeah.
You have, Cenk, and we need you right where you are. I mean, had you won, I mean, you would totally be an awesome force in the Congress. But the work and what you're doing right now through the channels of media, and God knows, as mainstream media just continues to parrot what the corporatists of both parties have to say, and what the corporations, the corporate states of America, by and large, they don't have a working class lens, as you and I talk about all the time. What you have built at TYT is necessary. And it also reminds me, you know, I'm doing a lot of puzzles with my grandchildren, and every piece has a distinctive role. And sometimes we forget that. And the pieces make the whole. I mean, we need every piece to bring the picture into focus. And what you are doing to help with democracy, which we're going to be talking about that a little later in the show, is absolutely necessary, like life and death necessary. So thank you for your vision and for your sacrifice.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That's lovely of you to say. I do sometimes think of a world that could have been an alternate universe where you and I were both in Congress. My guess is that it things would have been different.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, I don't think
so. May I ask you a question about your race? What was it? What were some of the things that resonated really deeply with you, and why did you make the decision that you're going to use your gifts, continue to use your gifts in the way that you're using them right now?
Yeah, you know how they, I think it was a Ferris Bueller, they said, I didn't know that math was going to be involved here. I didn't know you asking me questions was going to be involved here. Okay, no, seriously, that's a great question. It's important that I should share it with the audience. The number one lesson that I learned is, and which then doubles down on why I'm staying right here, is that media was the biggest factor by an order of magnitude. I had as much money as Christie did, as the Republicans did, and I had way more volunteers. I think my campaign manager was brilliant. You know, I think we did a lot of things right, but when the media attacked, there was no defense against it because they would just take the mic away. And so, you know, the voters only heard negative things about me. They heard almost literally no positive things about me. So I don't, like, sometimes people get mad at the voters. That's like Democratic leadership 101, to get mad at the voters. Not me. I don't blame them at all. If I thought that I was the guy that the media painted me to be, I'd vote against me too. And so, yeah. So that's why the power of the media is so overwhelmingly important.
Yeah, and I know the feeling about how people paint you. You don't even recognize yourself sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, they said I was anti-Muslim. I'm Muslim. It just doesn't, like, you know.
Go figure.
Yeah, but the reason I bring that up is not just, oh yeah, they're bad guys and they were lying about me, blah, blah, blah. No, I bring that up because if I thought somebody was running in my district that was anti-Muslim, I'd definitely vote against them, right?
Sure.
Or anti-Semitic or anti-Black or anything of those things. Of course I'd vote against them, right? So yeah. That's why the framing of the press unfortunately makes a giant difference. But hey, good news, here we are on our own.
Here we are. The power of the mic, baby.
That's right. They can't take this one away.
No, they cannot. Thanks to the members, right?
That's right. That's absolutely true. Yeah. And guys, I mean, look, that's not just like a glib thing to say. Because we're funded by you guys, they literally cannot take our power away. Okay. You are our power. And they'd have to get to you $5 at a time, right? And it's not going to happen. So you whatever power we have, you have given us.
Exactly right.
All right. So we'll start off with one comment before we get going. Mickey C, the Silver Dragon, says, I need a massive dose of Nina tonight. So discouraged and needing lifting up. Oh. Here to deliver. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do it, Nina. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
What's your story of the week?
Story of the week is the future of the filibuster. We know that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer delivered an ultimatum to the Republicans. He told them to knock it off with the anti-voting rights legislation. And so he is threatening to actually do something about the wall that the Republicans have built, and simply, Jenk, and hopefully we'll talk about this a little bit, that wall is not just built on the federal level. I mean, look at what they're doing in state houses all across this country with 550 pieces of legislation having been introduced in 47 states. So that attack on voting rights and democracy itself is happening at all levels. But he gave an ultimatum. So on Monday, Senator Schumer said the Senate must adapt to respond to moves to restrict access to voting. No stuff. I want to say the other word. No. Okay, we with the members. I can actually still say that. So Tom Porter of The Insider, and we'll put that up, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer sets his target on the filibuster, the trademark feature of the Senate, which means that most legislation requires the votes of at least 60 of the 100 senators to pass. And then Senator Schumer wrote, the Senate was designed to evolve and has evolved many times in our history. The fight for the ballot is as old as the Republic. Over the coming weeks, the Senate will once again consider how to perfect this union and confront the historic challenges facing our democracy. And that was from Senator Chuck Schumer. My.
Yeah. So now let's get real. So what do we think is actually going to happen? Because Democrats have, you know, huffed and puffed, or at least some portion of them, about you know, the filibusters blocking all progress, and Schumer is in that category. Others have been noncommittal, like Joe Biden, and then you've got the Manchin wing, obviously, that's supporting the filibuster. So now you do need all 50 to say yes to get rid of the filibuster. So do we think that we're going to have a so-called democracy exception, which obviously is, if we're keeping it real, totally made up, right? On the filibuster. On the other hand, the filibuster is totally made up. So
yeah, it is.
Yeah, since it's a Senate rule, it has nothing that moors it to the Constitution or the law.
That's right. It's not legally binding. And I'm glad you brought that. I don't think so, because we have two Democrats, the what you call Manchinima. Yeah, those two people who are saying they're not going to budge. So the fact that you're saying let's get real, I think that this is all show. And I hope that I am proven wrong. And then can we just put up the rest of what Senator Schumer had to say, Jenk? And I want you to respond to this, because he goes on to say that we hope, living in hope, we hope our Republican colleagues change course and work with us. Yeah. But if they do not, the Senate will debate and consider changes to Senate rules on or before January 17th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, to protect the foundation of our democracy, free and fair elections. Jesus. Okay, Jenk, you respond. I'm going to respond after you. I got a lot to say about that.
Yeah, to be fair to Chuck Schumer, when he says we hope our Republican colleagues will work with us, of course, he doesn't believe that either. He's just saying that, like, well, look, if you're going to give us no choice if you don't work with us. So, you know, there's plenty of reasons to criticize Democratic leadership, but that isn't one of them. It sounds like a joke to us, but he knows it's a joke too. He's just saying you're forcing our hand. So good, no problem there, right? If not only he, but the entire Senate Democratic Caucus agrees to this, then great, then we got no problems. That Martin Luther King Day is 11 days from now. Okay, so I guess in 11 days everything will be solved. But I would be shocked. So I don't know why he said that, when I think it has, you know, by January 17th, I think it has about a 2% chance of happening.
I agree. Listen, I hope we're both wrong, because they had more days behind them than this, you know, making this date be on MLK Day. And you're right. Listen, Senator Schumer is saying all the right things. I'll give it to him. I'll check off that box. But a true tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would have been to have worked on this many months ago. It is also to fight for Build Back Better and the components that still remain in there, even though they're weaker than what was proposed, it is truly in the spirit of Dr. King, who challenged this country for its sins against the poor, is to have paid family medical leave, is to secure voting rights, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you and I can go on and on with this. So for me, I just find it a bit trite to continue to try to use Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Day to make this ultimatum when the true spirit and legacy of Dr. King knows not just one day, that these actions from the filibuster to making sure that people have paid family leave, can afford their prescriptions, can afford food, is really the foundational point of what Dr. King represents. I want to see some more righteous indignation than we just hope that the Republicans cooperate. How about getting your own house in order, which is dealing with the Democrats first, and we'll deal with the Republicans on the way.
Yeah, so Nina, I'm going to keep it super real here. Look, I always want to push for the most, and then, you know, at the very last second, if you're going to do a deal, get the best deal you can. And that's normal negotiation for any rational person. And coming in, I thought it was obvious that they had to get rid of the filibuster, otherwise they couldn't really pass anything. And I thought not passing anything is, it's not unacceptable in terms of just policy, but in terms of politics, it's nearly political suicide for the Democrats to not pass anything. So, but now I'm at a point where I realize, no, Democratic leadership is just, they're just not going to do it. They're not going to do almost anything. And so they're going to, at this point, I would guess that they're almost definitely going to keep most of the filibuster because it protects their donors. So they cannot get rid of that security blanket for their donors. Otherwise, they're all going to be embarrassed that they keep voting against what they claimed were Democratic principles. So they got to keep it for Machiavellian, horrible political reasons. So I'm at a point, and I'm curious where you are, and that's why I said in the school of keeping it real, I'm at a point where I'll take the democracy exception to just pass voting rights, because I actually think that's probably the maximum of what we can get in a Biden administration with this Democratic Senate.
Yeah, I mean, but they have us right where they want us. And you're right, both of these things can be true at the same time. They always want us to be able to accept the least that they can do. However, you are absolutely right. When it comes to something of this magnitude, we can't just say, you know, no, don't accept the exception. No, we have to accept the exception, but at the same time, not accept the exception, if that makes sense. And so I'm tired of playing to the least common denominator. And that is why it is so important that the work that you're doing, the work that the members are doing, but to have people who do have the courage to run for these seats and buck against the status quo. That is the only thing that's going to save us. And let us not let the Republicans off the hook, because we got Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who argued that the bills create an unfair advantage in elections and violate states' rights. And he's referring to the voting rights bills that are in the Senate right now, namely the John Lewis voting rights law. And imagine him, the flipping nerve of him to say that it is an unfair advantage in elections and violate states' rights. Meanwhile, in a state near you, the Republicans on the state levels of government are doing everything that they can to make it harder for people to exercise their right to vote.
It's important context for people to know that literally every law that the Republicans have passed in all those different states that they control restrict voting rights. None of them add to voting rights. That's so right. So Mitch McConnell is saying letting more people vote in a democracy would hurt voting rights. And that's just logically impossible. It makes no sense at all. What he's actually saying is it would hurt Republicans' chances of winning if more people voted. And so it's super obvious, and obviously our members have written in about how the Republicans are unsalvageable, and it's true. You're not going to get Republicans who have been saying since Paul Weyrich said it in 1980 that they want less people to vote so they can win elections. You're not going to get them to magically turn around and go, oh, right. Oh, democracy. I forgot about democracy. Yeah, sure. We should do the right thing. You like, it's a little stunning. Well, in fact, let me ask that question to you. Like, you think there's, I think there's some chance that Joe Biden actually thinks Republicans mean well, and others in the Democratic Party think, oh, they mean well, we just have differences of opinion. But that seems stunning to any average person. Like, that's, of course they don't mean well. Of course they want less people voting. What do you think? Do people in Democratic leadership who keep constantly talking about how the Republicans should be stronger, do they really think the Republicans are honest actors? Can they be that naive?
I think some of them do, and certainly people from President Biden's generation and navigation of the halls of Congress at the time that he was there, certainly the experience and the interaction. And we're dealing with a totally different Democratic Party for the most part, with the exception of there were some segregationists still alive when Senator Biden navigated those halls. But I do think that he comes from an era where he believes that they mean well. Remember when he was running, one of the attributes he said that he brought to the table that that our dear Senator Sanders did not, was that he would be able to reach across the aisle and be able to work with Republicans and get them to do the right thing. He also said that he thought that they were, and I'm paraphrasing him, acting up and acting out solely because President Trump was the president. But as soon as he becomes president, they're going to magically do the right thing. Now, that took away the fact that Senator Bernie Sanders got more legislation and amendments passed than anybody in the Senate. And he had to work across the aisle to get that done. But the major selling point in terms of electability, as we all remember, was that then Senator Joe Biden said that he would be able to get the Republicans to act right.
Yeah. What I'm really afraid of is that he actually believes that.
I think he does.
There's a 0% chance that Joe Biden or anyone else on the planet will get the Republicans to act right. 0%. That one I'm super clear on. All right, before we move on, I'll read a comment or two. Happily, Vax wrote in, a democracy carve out is the worst possible solution. It means Democrats will not do any other carve out, but Republicans will do their own carve outs once they have power. Best get rid of the filibuster. And if you want to do it partially, let them talk about the bill on hand and have 60 people vote to keep talking. So here's the deal. You're happily, Vax, you're absolutely right about the fact that it's the only carve out you'll get if you get it. And you're absolutely right that the Republicans will take away the filibuster the minute they're in power, and will pass their entire agenda. But I now think that that's the best case scenario. Now, that's absurd. That's a horrible case scenario, right? That's where we are, guys. The Democrats aren't going to do any more than that. That's my sense of it. So good luck to us all. But we all know the Republicans are going to take away the filibuster, and we all like. And if Nina, if the Democrats took away the filibuster now and passed their agenda, I would be floored. I would be. It would be the most shocking thing that's ever happened in politics.
I double dare them to do it. Right? We dare them to do it. Please do it. Use the power. I mean, power is finite. You have to use it. And why they are so afraid to use it, I mean, God only knows. Well, I think we know a little bit too. It is because we're dealing with the corporatists in both wings of the party, and they are very much united in thwarting progress in this country. Those are the facts.
Yep. So buckle up, everybody. When Republicans get back in power, we're all in a world of hurt because Democrats refuse
to. They're going to use the power.
Yeah. They're going to use it. Yeah, for sure.
That's right.
All right. Yasmin H wrote in on Super Chat. Love Nina and Dr. Ritchie. Thank you for all you do from the UK. That's lovely to hear. J Dog Darkness wrote it on Twitch. Keep it strong, Nina and Jen. Can't stop, won't stop. Surrender isn't an option. Somebody let the Dems know. Happy New Year's. Melanie D44 said, we got your back, Nina. Rupert said, Corp Dems are good with symbolic gestures. It will be a major fail if it doesn't pass. with MLK optics. Buckle up then, brace for impact. Okay, so Nina, let's go to the next topic. Who's your hero of the week?
Oh, I love when we do this part because at least we can bring the members something good. So it is Maxine McNair. And Miss Maxine McNair was the last living parent of any of the four Black girls who were killed in the 1963 Alabama church bombing. And she just died on Sunday. And let's put up what the Associated Press wrote. McNair's daughter, 11-year-old Denise McNair, so we want to walk down history lane here, was the youngest girl killed in the bombing of Birmingham's 16th Street Baptist Church, the deadliest single attack of the civil rights movement. Also killed were three 14-year-olds, Addie Mae Collins, Carol Rosamond Robinson, and Cynthia Donnie Wesley. And you know what, Jink, that is not long ago. On the continuum of history, that was just yesterday that bombing actually happened in the 20th century. And the fact that they were children, the fact that the people who did that just flat out did not give a damn. And we cannot forget. And I'm so happy that we're lifting Maxine McNair, because I know she's probably somebody that very few people know. And she was a teacher. She continued to fight for civil rights. And I know it takes so much because it really is out of the natural order of things for a parent to have to bury their child, but especially the traumatic way that her daughter and her daughter's friends died is just unconscionable.
Yeah. And her husband also died at the age of 93. And that was about 3 years ago that he died. And he'd gone in and gotten into office. And he was actually one of the very few African Americans in that region to get elected after Reconstruction. And so I love that they gave back to the community. And so it's a great hero of the week. But it does force us to come face to face with the realities of this country's upbringing, right?
Yeah.
So relative to other cultures, the American culture is still at best a teenager, right?
That's right.
So, you know, Chinese culture has been around, for example, for thousands of years, and America's only been around for around 250 years, right? So it's a very young culture, and the culture is steeped in violence. There's just no question about that. And if we're being honest about it, in the South, right-wing culture.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Celebrated terrorism because it was not just exceptions. People would do this type of violence, whether it was intimidation like cross burnings and throwing rocks through people's windows and et cetera, or it was actually lynching them or bombing these poor girls. She was, Denise McNair was the youngest of the three. She was 11. The others were 14 years old. And that kind of, I mean, that's literal terrorism. Anybody would, I mean, it's insane to not say it's terrorism. Obviously it is. And that kind of terrorism was normal. And it's the most literal terrorism you've ever heard of, because it was meant to terrorize African Americans in the South and unfortunately other parts of the country as well into submission. and into not fighting back and into taking away their rights. And so this is going to, you know, affect the conversation we're going to have a little bit later in the show. But Nina, for folks who think that the right wing has the same intentions as we do and believes in democracy and doing things the political way, that's not been the history of this country.
No, not at all. And they're delusional. And sometimes, as you know, when we talk about history, because you got this fight against critical race theory, which, you know, you and I have talked about several times, to me, it is really a misconception that we cannot both love this country and critique this country. I believe, you know, what Brother James Baldwin once said about the country, you know, he said, "I love this country more than any other country." I'm paraphrasing him. And for that reason, I reserve the right to critique it. And why? To make it better. And so if we walk around here delusional and pretending that there were not some ugly and bad parts of the formation of this nation, we are insane and willing to accept and turn a blind eye to the pathway to really forge a more perfect union is not to ignore that history, but to understand that history and figure out a way to make things, emphasis on make things better through interaction, through public policy, et cetera, everything at our disposal to do so. But no, you're right, Jane, it's delusion. And to walk around in delusion is a very dangerous thing.